The kid bent over and placed the Winchester on the ground at his feet.
Back away from it.
He did so, keeping his hands in plain sight. Depending on how much trigger pull her gun required, it might not take much to put a bullet in his head.
All right, turn around.
The kid turned to face her.
Max, hold.
A shock went through him as he recognized the poncho and the broad-brimmed brown hat. He had thought that dog looked familiar. So did his captor.
I thought you were dead.
Not hardly. What you really mean is that you thought you killed me?
You were trying to kill me at the time.
The kid saw that she had a blue-steeled Colt Lightning pointed at him from a distance of about 4 feet. Too far for him to jump her before she could pull the trigger. While keeping the revolver leveled and rock steady, she brought her left hand up and cuffed her hat back so it hung behind her head on its chin strap, revealing a head of closely cropped auburn hair and a narrow scabbed-over wound that started on the side of her head and disappeared into the hair above her right ear.
Your bullet just grazed me. It knocked me out cold, and I had a headache for 3 days afterward, but I wasn't dead.
I can see that. Where's the rest of your bunch?
I don't have a bunch. I was just traveling in the same direction as those men.
So you're alone?
Don't let that give you any ideas. I've killed men before, and I won't mind doing it again if I have to. Unbuckle that belt and set it down, slow and easy.
The kid knew if he allowed her to disarm him, his chances of getting away would plummet. She was a woman, but her face held a hard competence that told him gender didn't matter a whole lot in this case. Female or not, she couldn't be soft and feminine and survive for very long as a bounty hunter. She had to be plenty tough.
All right. McCall.
The use of the name he guessed belonged to her surprised her enough that the gun in her hand jerked a little. It was what the kid was watching for. He moved as soon as the reaction hit her. A quick shift to the right put him out of the line of fire for a split second, long enough for him to leap forward, bat the barrel even farther to the side, and grab the woman.
Max!
Knowing the big dog would spring to the attack, he tightened his grip on the woman, whirled around, and took her with him. The dog was already in midair, trying to leap onto his back. But he gave the woman a shove that sent her right into the animal's path. They crashed together, and both of them went sprawling. The kid sprang back and whipped out his Colt as the dog scrambled up again.
Call him off. I don't want to shoot him, but I will if I have to.
Max, down!
The dog subsided. The woman had dropped her gun when she fell. It lay a couple of feet to her right. The kid saw her eyeing it.
Don't try it.
How do you know my name? What did you do? Paw through my saddlebags after you stole my horse?
You mean after you tried to kill me?
The wanted posters say dead or alive. I take prisoners in alive if I can, but if they put up a fight...
To answer your question, yes. I looked through your saddlebags. I found the envelope with the picture of the little girl in it.
You son of a bitch. You had no right.
Who is she? She can't be your daughter. Can't imagine a woman like you ever having children.
Why not? Because I'm a bounty hunter?
Let's just say you don't strike me as the maternal type.
Go to hell. What did you do with the picture? Do you still have it?
I sent it back to the address in Kansas City, along with the money I found in the saddlebags. I thought you were dead at the time, remember? I figured the little girl and whoever's taking care of her might need the cash.
You did that?
Regardless of what you think about me, McCall, and I'm a lot of things that aren't very good, I'll admit that. I'm not a thief.
You took my horse.
I thought you were dead and I didn't have much choice in the matter.
Can I stand up?
Don't get too fancy about it. And don't try for any weapons you've got under that poncho. Why do you wear it anyway? Wait. Don't tell me. It helps hide the fact that you're a woman, doesn't it? Just like the short hair.
Go to hell.
She climbed to her feet.
Why I do things is my business.
Like following me all the way from Nevada?
I want that 10 grand.
For the little girl back in Kansas City?
Shut up about her, would ya?
More of your business?
Damn right.
Dress like a man, cuss like a man. Do you chew tobacco and drink rotgut whiskey, too?
I never picked up the habit of chewing. A drink would be pretty good right now, though.
What in blazes am I going to do with you?
Better go ahead and kill me, because if I get the chance, I'm sure as hell gonna kill you.
Listen to me. Those wanted posters are wrong. They're all a mistake. I never killed any prison guards. My lawyer is working on clearing my name right now.
Yeah, the prisons are full of innocent men.
I was innocent. Damn it, I am innocent. If you don't believe me, I'll have to make sure you don't follow me again.
By gunning me down?
I'll tie you up, leave you here, and take your horse with me. You'll be able to get loose eventually.
Leaving me on foot in the middle of nowhere is the same as killing me, isn't it?
Not hardly, to use your words. I'll leave your guns where you can find them. It's not more than 10 miles to Flagstaff. That's a long walk, but it won't kill you.
I'll track you down. You won't be able to hide your trail from me, and when I catch up to you again, I won't sic Max on you. I'll just go ahead and put a bullet in your dirty hide.
I'm sorry you feel that way. Take off that poncho.
Try to mess with me, Morgan, and I'll kill you, I swear it. But not until I've taken a knife to you and made you wish you were already dead.
That's not what I want. I just want to make sure you don't have any other guns or knives hidden under that thing.
Glaring at him, she took hold of the bottom of the poncho and pulled it up and over her head, revealing that she wore a butternut-colored man's shirt under the voluminous garment. Her breasts weren't overly large, but they were big enough they could be spotted easily if she weren't wearing the poncho.
Turn around.
She did as he told her. He stepped forward and plucked a knife from a sheath on her left hip. The shirt and the buckskin trousers were tight enough for him to see that she didn't appear to be carrying any other guns.
All right, go hug that tree over there.
She followed the order. He circled wide around the dog, which continued to stare at him with open hostility. He had some cord in his saddlebags and paused to crouch and fumble it out by feel while he kept his Colt leveled at the woman. Approaching the tree as McCall put her arms around it, he angled in so he could still cover her.
Put your hands out as far as they'll go.
Why should I cooperate with you?
Because if you don't, I'll wrap you on the head with the barrel of this gun, knock you out, and tie you up anyway. Do what I tell you and you'll avoid another headache.
You are one gold-plated son of a bitch, you know that, Morgan?
So I've been told.
Anyway, you can't knock me out. If Max sees you hurt me, he'll come after you. There won't be any stopping him. He's barely controlling himself now.
Then do what I tell you, and there won't be any need for me to shoot him.
She thrust her hands out as the kid had told her to. Moving fast so she couldn't pull back, he whipped the cord around her wrists, then yanked it tight.
Careful, you bastard!
Sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you.
He holstered his gun and finished binding her wrists together, tying the knots so she would be able to work them loose, but would take her a while to do so.
Keep the dog here with you. I will shoot him if I have to.
She glared at him around the tree trunk and didn't say anything. He gathered up his gear, well aware of the hostile stares directed at him by both McCall and the dog.
You're stealing my horse again.
I don't have any choice in the matter. Anyway, it's a fine horse.
You're gonna wind up at the end of a hang rope.
I've been worse places.
He mounted up and looked for her horse. It took him a while to find it. She had left it several hundred yards away and approached the camp on foot. When he rode back up to the camp leading the chestnut gelding, he stiffened in the saddle as he looked at the tree where he had left her. She was gone. He thought for a second he must be looking at the wrong tree. The fire had died down and wasn't giving off much light anymore. As he reined the black to a halt, he realized it was the right tree. McCall just wasn't tied to it anymore. There was no sign of her or the dog in the clearing. The slight rustle of pine boughs was the only warning he had. He twisted in the saddle and looked up as his hand flashed to his gun. The Colt hadn't cleared leather yet when McCall plunged down from a branch above and slammed into him. The diving tackle knocked him off the horse with barely enough time to kick his feet free of the stirrups. He hit the ground with her weight driving down on top of him. A second later, something rough struck his head with stunning force. The kid felt his awareness slipping away. It was an utterly revolting development, he thought when he regained consciousness. For the second time in only a week, he had been knocked out by a woman. The memory of being tackled and then pounded into oblivion by McCall came flooding back to him, along with the pain in his head. His arms and shoulders hurt too, and it took him a moment to figure out the reason why. He was sitting on the ground at the base of a tree, and his arms had been wrenched back behind the trunk so his wrists could be lashed together. His head hung forward on his chest. His eyes were closed, but he could see a shifting red glare against his eyelids that came from a campfire larger than the one he had built earlier. He felt the warmth of the flames against his face. He hauled his head upright. It seemed to weigh 100 pounds. His eyelids were equally heavy, but he forced them up, then winced as the glare from the fire struck his eyes.
So, you're awake, are you?
The kid turned his head a little and saw McCall sitting beside the fire. She wore her hat and poncho again, and she had a Winchester cradled across her knees.
I was starting to think maybe I'd walloped you too hard with that branch.
Yeah. I'm sure you'd have been broken-hearted if I was dead.
You'd have been easier to handle, no doubt about that. But you sure would have started to stink before we got to Santa Fe. I probably would have wound up cutting off your head and just taking it with me. I hate doing that.
The kid looked toward the big ugly dog that sat a few feet away. He would have sworn that the beast was grinning at him.
You two are proud of yourselves, aren't you?
I'll admit, we usually get what we go after, don't we, Max?
What happens now?
I take you to Santa Fe and collect that 10 grand reward.
Flagstaff is a lot closer. You could turn me over to the authorities there and put in your claim.
And have to trust that some crooked lawman wouldn't try to cheat me? No thanks. It's the territory of New Mexico that wants you, and I intend to go as high up the ladder as I can. I'd dump you right in the governor's lap if I could. That way everybody will know I've got the whole 10,000 coming to me. I captured the notorious Kid Morgan all by myself.
You had a little help.
He'll get his share, don't worry. Max and I have been partners for a long time. We work well together.
I figured I killed him when I threw him over the edge of that rock.
You could have. It was just pure luck he landed on Charlie Hobart. Charlie's a good-sized man. He broke Max's fall.
So I came close to killing him and close to killing you on the same night.
Yeah. You shouldn't be surprised that I don't like you, Morgan.
I don't care if you like me. I just wish you'd believe me when I tell you that this is all wrong.
You mean that loco story about those wanted posters being a mistake? If you want to sell me a bill of goods, mister, you're better off trying something else. But if by some miracle you are telling the truth, you can straighten it out with the law in New Mexico. After I've collected that bounty.
What's your name besides McCall?
Why do you want to know?
Just curious, I guess.
Well, it's none of your business.
What's the story on that little girl in the picture?
That's really none of your business.
Hey, I'm just making conversation here. You're going to take me to Santa Fe. We'll be on the trail together for at least a week, probably more. It'll be a long, boring ride if we can't even talk. I'm guessing that she's your niece.
Well, you're wrong. You're so damn sure of yourself. Sure you got me pegged. She's my daughter, all right?
Sorry.
You should be. Her name is Linda Sue, not that it's any affair of yours. She lives in Kansas City with my mother. I send money back to them whenever I can.
So I did the right thing by sending that roll of greenbacks to them.
Yeah, you did. Although my mother's gonna be worried when she gets the picture of Linda Sue with the money. She's liable to think I'm dead.
At the time, I thought you were dead. I thought the picture ought to go back where it came from.
I reckon that was a thoughtful thing for you to do. As soon as we get to somewhere I can post a letter, I'll write to my mother and let her know I'm still alive.
Sorry if I've caused any trouble.
Hell, you didn't know. No way you could know my life story. You wouldn't want to, even if you could.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. I'd be glad to listen to anything you want to tell me.
Her eyes narrowed as she looked at him. Then her face twisted in a scowl, and she jerked the rifle up toward him.
What the hell are you trying to do? Sweet talk me? Is that what you think you're gonna do, Morgan? Pretend that you like the homely old gal so you can wrap her around your little finger and get her to do whatever you want? Cutting the head off your corpse is starting to sound better all the time.
You're not homely, and you're not old, McCall. I doubt if you're much more than 25. I was just making conversation, not trying to seduce you.
Yeah, well, you damn well better not try. I don't put up with any of that stuff. Not since Pronto.
Pronto?
Yeah, Pronto Pike. Used to be my partner. You must have seen him that night we tangled before. It was his bunch I was traveling with. I knew it was a mistake. We came damn near to shooting each other when we split up a year ago, but when he asked me to give him a hand tracking you down, I said I would. Then when I was wounded, when you wounded me, he went off and left me, the bastard. All he was interested in was that reward.
I wouldn't have figured you for being friends with a cold-blooded bastard like Pike.
You know him?
We ran into each other in Las Vegas. He had ideas about that 10 grand reward just like you do.
But you got away from him?
Yeah.
She started heaping dirt on the flames to put out the fire.
What are you doing?
You should have told me Pike was on your trail. I figured we had both given him the slip. You getting away from him like that will just make him more loco than ever. He'll hunt you down and try to take you away from me.
I thought you used to be lovers.
I never said that.
McCall extinguished the last of the flames, and darkness plunged over the camp.
But it's true. And if he finds out that I've got you and he doesn't, he's liable to kill us both. You for the bounty, and me for the sheer fun of it.
Do you still plan to take me all the way to Santa Fe?
That's right. And we're gonna get started right now. You'd be wise not to give me any trouble from here on out, Morgan. If you cooperate, the worst I'll do is take you to Santa Fe and turn you in, alive. Pike won't go to that much bother.
You mean he'll just kill me and be done with it?
Isn't that what I told you? If you doubt it, maybe I'll just leave you tied to that tree and let Pike find you.
I'll cooperate. For now.
You're not making any promises for down the road, is that it?
Something like that.
Yeah, well, right now I'll settle for putting this part of the country behind us.
She came over to him and pulled her knife from its sheath.
I have your word you won't try to escape. Because I can knock you out and tie you belly down over your horse if you'd rather.
I'll give you my word.
McCall returned the nod and went around to the other side of the tree. The kid felt the knife tug on the ropes as she cut them. He pulled his arms back in front of him. Grimacing, as pain shot through the stiff muscles. His hands had gone partially numb. He rubbed them together to get feeling into them.
You can ride that buckskin of yours. I'm taking Blackie.
You named your horse Blackie? Your black horse?
You got a problem with that? I could still kill you and cut your head off, you know.
No, no problem.
The kid went over to the buckskin and swung up into the saddle. McCall did the same.
Move out. You're leading the way.
You think I know where we're going?
You know which way's east. I want you in front of me so I can shoot you if I have to.
The kid shook his head and heeled the buckskin into motion. Riding at night was tricky, especially in rugged terrain, so he let the horse pick his own pace. McCall rode to the left and a few feet behind him, leading the third horse.
There's one thing I'm curious about.
What's that?
How did you get loose when I went to find that horse you were riding? I didn't tie you up as tight as I could, but you shouldn't have been able to work your way free that quickly.
You've got Max to thank for that. He chewed through that cord without much trouble when I told him to.
I didn't figure on some damn trick dog.
You didn't figure on a lot of things.
The kid didn't have a response for that, so he didn't say anything. He couldn't help but think, though, that he had never met a woman quite like the bounty hunter named McCall. She kept them moving far into the night, explaining that if anyone had spotted the campfire, she wanted to be a long way from that location before they stopped to rest. When she finally called a halt, a faint tinge of gray in the eastern sky signaled dawn was only a few hours off. McCall dismounted first and drew her gun.
All right, Morgan. Get down from that horse and put your hands behind you.
I need to tend to some personal business first.
The kid swung down from the buckskin.
If you want to take a piss, there's a bush right there that could use some watering.
McCall raised her Colt Lightning and pointed it at his head.
It's short enough that I can see to shoot you if you give me a good reason.
I promised to cooperate, remember?
Yeah, but it wasn't much of a promise. For now, you said. And how the hell am I supposed to know how long that is?
He stepped behind the bush and took care of the chore while she stood a few feet away, aiming the gun at his head. When he was finished, he walked back to his horse.
All right, hands behind your back.
You don't need to tie me up.
I'll rest a lot easier if I do.
How about this? I give you my word I won't try to escape for the next 24 hours. That way you can get some sleep too while I stand guard.
I'm supposed to believe an hombre who's wanted for breaking out of prison and murdering guards?
One of those charges is completely false. And as far as I knew until recently, the other one had been dropped because of extenuating circumstances.
Extenuating? Where'd you learn a word like that?
You'd be surprised how much I know.
Maybe. But you don't know how to do like you're told. Now, about putting your hands behind your back...
Do you know where I was going when you caught up to me?
Not really.
I was going to Santa Fe. My lawyer's there. That's where I want to go. You're not taking me there as much as we're just riding together.
This gun says different. So does Max. He can knock you down and chew on you for a while if you don't want to go along with what I say. After that, I reckon you won't be so quick to argue.
The kid put his hands behind his back.
One of these days, you won't have that gun and that dog.
Yeah, you just keep telling yourself that.
She tied his hands, then helped him sit down at the base of a tree. After holstering the Lightning, she pulled her Winchester from its sheath and sat down where she could lean back against the trunk of another tree. She didn't make a fire, and it was cold enough that their breath fogged in front of their faces. As uncomfortable as the kid was, he didn't think he'd be able to sleep. But exhaustion trumped discomfort, and even though he was leaning against the rough bark of a pine trunk, he dozed off quickly. When he woke up, he found he had slumped onto his side while he was sleeping. The sun was up, slanting its rays through the trees. A few yards away, McCall was lying on her side too, and appeared to be sound asleep. Her hat had come off, and her head was pillowed on one arm. The hard lines of her face had softened some as she relaxed. She wasn't what anybody would call pretty, but as the kid looked at her, he realized that when she wasn't trying to appear fierce and intimidating, her features had a certain attractiveness to them. The lines that a hard life had etched into her face also gave her character. The kid's mouth tightened into a grim line as he told himself he shouldn't be thinking such things about her or about any woman. It hadn't been long enough since he had buried his wife. But it didn't hurt anything to lie there and look at McCall. He wondered how she had wound up with a child living in Kansas City while she wandered the frontier trying to apprehend the worst of the bad men who were wanted by the law. The sound of hoofbeats drifted to the kid's ears and caused him to jerk his head up as he listened intently. Several horses, he decided, and they weren't far away. McCall still slept soundly.
McCall! McCall! Wake up! Rider's coming!
She didn't budge. In fact, her breathing seemed to be deeper and more regular than ever. She was settling in for a nice, long sleep. The kid sat up. He pushed his back against the tree trunk and started wiggling his shoulders as he worked his way up. After a moment, he managed to get a foot underneath him and awkwardly pushed himself into a standing position. His legs were stiff from sleeping on the ground. He stumbled over to McCall and nudged her shoulder with a booted foot.
Wake up, damn it!
What?
She woke up all right. She sat bolt upright, snatched the Winchester from the ground beside her, and rammed the barrel into the kid's belly, causing him to double over in pain. As the kid tried not to retch, McCall scrambled to her feet, keeping the rifle on him.
What the hell are you trying to do?
Rider's coming.
Oh, I'm gonna cut you loose.
Yeah, good idea.
She stepped behind the kid.
We've got to keep our horses quiet and hope those men, whoever they are, pass us by. I can count on your word not to try to escape.
You can.
She slashed the ropes around his wrists. He massaged them, then stepped over to the buckskin and put a hand on the horse's muzzle. McCall did the same with the other two horses.
Quiet, Max.
Max stood with his tail up and the hair on the back of his neck bristling, but he didn't make a sound. The hoofbeats grew louder. The riders probably weren't more than 50 yards away. The kid and McCall waited in tense silence. The hoofbeats began to recede as the riders passed the camp and were going on without discovering it. The kid and McCall stood motionless until the sound of the horses faded away completely.
They're out of earshot now.
Did you tell if they were Pike and his men?
No. I could never hear them well enough for that.
If they were, they're ahead of us now. If we keep going east, we're liable to come up behind them.
I know. That's why we're going to cut south for a while and then head east again.
You know, sooner or later, we'll have to find out just how much you trust me.
What do you mean by that?
If we run into Pike, there'll be trouble. You said.
Yeah, you can count on that.
When that time comes, you're going to have to give me a gun. Two of us will have a better chance against five killers.
Those still aren't good odds. But I'll have to admit they're better than 5-1. Still, I might be a damn fool to put a gun in your hand.
I guess if it happens, we'll find out.
When? I know Pike. Since you got away from him in Las Vegas, he'll feel like he's been cheated and won't stop looking for you until he finds you. Not with 10 grand at stake. So it's not a matter of if we have to fight for our lives, Morgan. It's a matter of when.
They cut south for the next couple of days, hitting the Verde River and following it southeast as it cut around the Mogollon Rim. The kid had a vague memory of his father telling him about some range war he had been involved with in the area, but he didn't recall any of the details. It was the long way around and would add days to their journey to Santa Fe, but McCall was convinced it would help them avoid Pronto Pike, if, in fact, Pike and his bunch of bounty killers were on their trail. The kid and McCall rode along with the rim looming to their left. Max padded alongside them.
Pike must be hell on wheels to make you as nervous as he does.
There's a big difference between being careful and being nervous. Don't forget, I rode with Pike for a good long time. I know what sort of man he is. He likes killing people, Morgan. He just makes sure that everybody he kills is wanted by the law. That way he doesn't wind up at the end of a hang rope himself.
I saw enough of him in Las Vegas to know that you're probably right.
You could bet a hat that I am. Why, one time I saw Pike...
Whatever she was going to say about Pike went unfinished as half a dozen gunshots rang out. The kid and McCall reined in sharply and exchanged glances.
Whoever that is, they don't seem to be shooting at us.
And it's none of our business either.
Somebody's putting up a fight.
Still not any of our business.
Unless Pike's mixed up in it somehow. Maybe he and his men jumped somebody they thought was us. Could be innocent people being shot at over there.
You're a fugitive from the law. Men like you aren't usually worried about what might be happening to innocent people.
That's just one more indication the charges against me are a mistake.
Not still scraping out that tune on your fiddle, are you? Oh, right, we'll go take a look, but that's all. We're not getting mixed up in any war unless it can't be avoided.
They turned their horses and rode toward the rim, which was nothing more than the southern edge of the Mogollon Mesa and the massive Colorado Plateau. In his days as Conrad Browning, when he took an active interest in a number of railroad lines, the kid had studied dozens of survey and topographical maps and knew the geography of the western states. The rugged limestone and sandstone cliffs of the rim rose 1,000 feet or more above the pine-dotted flats that stretched off to the south. Trails ran to the top, so the rim wasn't an impassable barrier. But it was a definite dividing line that ran through the midsection of Arizona territory. There were a lot of ranches in the area, and more than a few mines in the canyons that nature had cut into the rim. The shots got louder as the kid and McCall approached the dark, looming cliffs. McCall motioned for the kid to slow down as they reached the edge of a stand of trees. She dismounted, and the kid followed suit. They stepped forward to where they could look across a clearing that stretched for a couple hundred yards to the base of a cliff. A rough log cabin squatted at the bottom of the cliff. A short distance to the right of it was the mouth of a narrow, steep-sided canyon. It appeared to be choked with brush, but when the kid looked closer, he saw that someone had built a gate across it and camouflaged that gate by tying branches to it. Somebody had closed off the canyon on purpose, but tried to conceal what they had done. A puff of gun smoke came from a loophole cut into the log wall every time the rifle cracked. The shots were directed at half a dozen men crouched behind boulders that had fallen from the cliff face in ages past. They littered the area in front of the cabin and served as cover for the gunmen. The range was a little long for Colts, but they acted like they had plenty of ammunition to spare as they continued peppering the cabin with shots.
That's not Pike and his bunch. So I was right. This is none of our business. Let's go.
The kid had been watching the cabin. The lack of return fire from other loopholes told him the defender was alone.
6-1 odds aren't what I'd call fair.
You want us to take a hand in this game? I told you, it's none of our business.
Sooner or later, they'll root out whoever's in the cabin and kill him.
Do you know who it is?
I don't have any idea.
Then why do you care? For all you know, he's a son of a bitch who deserves whatever he's got coming to him.
I still don't like it.
And I don't give a damn what you like or don't like. Climb back on your horse. We're getting out of here.
She hadn't been tying his hands the past couple of days. He was about to nod and reluctantly get back on the buckskin when he heard something else.
There's a wagon coming.
You're right. Let's get these horses out of sight.
They took hold of the reins and led the animals deeper into the trees, leaving them there along with the dog. The wagon moved up on their left, obviously following a trail they hadn't seen as they approached the scene of battle. The wagon stopped before it left the trees.
Make the old bastard duck, and I'll bring the stuff out to you.
Immediately, the men behind the boulders increased their fuselage, aiming high so the bullets would carry farther. A man darted from the trees carrying a small wooden crate. The kid's jaw tightened as he recognized the markings on the crate.
That's dynamite. They're going to blast the man out of there.
That's pretty raw. Bad enough when you outnumber somebody 6-1 without resorting to dynamite, but still...
None of our business.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You can ride away from 7 hard cases trying to kill an old man?
How do you know he's old?
The one who brought the dynamite called him an old bastard.
Could be just a figure of speech.
Could be an old-timer in there, somebody's grandfather.
Yeah, well, my old man was somebody's grandfather, and he was the sorriest son of a bitch to ever walk the face of the earth. We're leaving, Morgan. I'm getting tired of arguing the point.
The man with the crate of dynamite had reached the rocks. He bent and put the crate on the ground before prying the lid off.
He's lucky he didn't trip and fall while he was carrying that stuff. Might have had quite an explosion if that happened.
I thought you had to set dynamite off with blasting caps.
That's the normal procedure, but it's notoriously unstable. Men who handle it are usually more careful than to run around with a box full of it.
Maybe that fellow doesn't know that. And how come you do?
I spent time in several railroad construction camps while my companies were building spur lines.
What?
Never mind. Cole, we can't just stand by and let them blow somebody to kingdom come.
You're right. Damn it. What do you think we should do?
You're asking me?
I figure if you were able to break out of a place like Hellgate Prison, you must be able to come up with some pretty good ideas.
All right. How good a shot are you with a rifle?
I've lived this long. What do you think?
Fine. You see the fellow who brought out the dynamite? He's tying 3 sticks of it together. He's going to throw it at the cabin.
I see him. What do you want me to do?
When he draws back to let fly with it, see if he can drill his arm.
Make him drop the stuff.
If you can do that, I guarantee the rest of them will scatter like the devil himself is after them. Because that's pretty much what it'll amount to.
What about the one I'm supposed to wing?
That's why I didn't tell you to shoot him in the leg. He'll still be able to run.
You don't think they'll turn around and come after us?
I think they'll be too spooked to do that. But if they do, at least they'll be scattered. We can take them on 1 or 2 at a time.
That's assuming I give you a gun. That's a mighty big maybe.
I'll worry about that later. Looks like he's getting ready to light the fuse. Time for you to make up your mind, McCall.
She glared at him, but she lifted the rifle she had taken from her saddle. There was already a round in the chamber. She brought the weapon to her shoulder, snugged the butt against it, and nestled her cheek on the smooth wood of the stock so she could peer over the barrel.
You know, there's no guarantee I can make this shot. It won't be easy.
I never said it would be.
She squinted slightly as she settled the sights on the man who'd scratched the Lucifer to life and was about to hold the flame to the end of the twisted fuse dangling from the bundle of dynamite. The kid saw sparks fly as the fuse caught. The man drew his arm back high above his head as he prepared to throw the dynamite at the cabin. McCall squeezed the trigger. The .44-40 round tore through his arm. The 3 sticks of dynamite slipped from his fingers, fell to the ground, bounced once, and rolled to a stop, leaning against the side of the crate that held the rest of the dynamite. The gunmen scattered, just as he thought they would. At the same time, he turned and grabbed McCall's arm to shove her deeper into the stand of pine trees.
Move! Move! We've got to get farther away!
She turned and ran. So did the kid. Glancing over his shoulder, he caught a glimpse of the wounded man leaning over the crate and the dynamite he had dropped. He pawed frantically at it with his uninjured arm, trying to pluck the fuse away from the blasting caps. He was too late. The ground jumped up for a second under the kid's feet as a thunderous roar filled the air. The man bending over the dynamite disappeared in a sheet of flame. The kid stumbled and fell as what felt like a giant hand slapped him in the back. Pine needles, blown off their branches, showered down around him. He pushed himself up and twisted his head to look back again. A huge, rolling cloud of dust filled the open area in front of the cabin. The force of the explosion most likely crumbled the boulders to pebbles. He climbed to his feet and looked around for McCall. She lay a few yards away where the blast had knocked her down. She sat up and shook her head groggily. His hastily conceived plan hadn't included the whole crate of dynamite going off. At least one of the men had been killed for sure, and some or all of the others might not have gotten far enough away to escape the deadly force of the blast. It would probably be a good idea to find out about that as quickly as they could, he thought. He bent, caught hold of McCall's arm, and helped her to her feet. She had lost her hat when she fell, and her short auburn hair was tangled around her head.
Well, I think that did it.
Let's take a look.
Together, they moved to the edge of the trees. The dust cloud was starting to thin, but choking masses of the stuff still hung in the air here and there. The kid peered through the gaps and saw the boulders were still there, although it looked like the one closest to the site of the explosion had been toppled on its side. A pit, 5 feet deep and 20 feet wide, had been gouged out of the ground by the blast. Suddenly, a man came out of the dust, the gun in his hand spewing flame and death. McCall twisted toward him and fired the Winchester from the hip. The man stumbled and dropped his gun as the slug ripped through him. He collapsed with his hands pressed to his bloody midsection. As she faced that threat, McCall's back was turned toward another man who appeared out of the dust with no warning. His gun was swinging up toward the bounty hunter when the kid tackled him from the side and drove him off his feet. They sprawled on the ground. The kid got a hand on the man's wrist and wrenched his arm aside just as the man tried to turn the gun toward him. The man's other hand flashed up, clenched into a fist that slammed into the side of the kid's head. Ignoring the pain, the kid put his hand on the man's neck, digging fingers in to cut off his air. The man thrashed under him, but the kid hunkered down. He had to keep the gun pointed away from him and maintain his death grip until the man died or passed out, whichever came first. But he couldn't ignore the pain that shot through him when the man lifted a knee into his groin, making the kid loosen his grip. The man jerked his gun hand free. As he saw the barrel swinging swiftly toward him, the kid drove his head down into his opponent's face. The revolver went off, blasting close to his ear. He felt the sting of burning grains of powder as they sprayed across his cheek. The kid's forehead had pounded the man's nose, flattening it into a pulp. He lifted his head and grabbed for the man's gun, wrenching it loose. With savage strength, he brought the butt down in the middle of the man's already ruined face. The kid blinked blood out of his eyes and saw that the man was dead. He pushed himself to his feet and pawed more of the gore off his face. McCall stood nearby, holding the Winchester.
I would have shot him, but you were in the way. I could never get a clear shot.
You see any more of them?
No. Oh, there are a couple lying over yonder who look like they were killed by the explosion.
Let's go take a look at the cabin. Maybe whoever's in there can tell us what's going on here.
Are you sure you want to do that? We stopped those men from blowing up the place. That's enough. Let's find our horses and light a shock out of here.
I want to know what it was about.
Damn it, I'm in charge here. I've got the gun.
Not the only one.
Oh, right, if it's that important to you, let's go check out the cabin.
I think it's a good idea.
Most of the dust had cleared, and the kid was acutely aware that they were out in the open as they walked around the boulders. The cabin appeared to be undamaged. The rocks had shielded it from most of the force of the blast. As they approached, the door swung open, and the barrel of a rifle thrust out. The kid and McCall tensed.
Don't come any closer. I'll shoot if I have to.
We saw plenty proof of that, old-timer. We're on your side, though. You don't have to be afraid of us.
How can you be on my side? I don't know you. You ain't got no earthly idea who I am.
That's true. I'm glad to see that somebody else is thinking straight around here.
That explosion could have destroyed your cabin, with you in it. Thanks to us, it didn't.
Well, I'm obliged to you for that, I reckon. But that don't mean I'm dumb enough to trust you. Who are you, anyway?
My name's Morgan. This is McCall. We were riding through when we heard the shots.
How come you got mixed up in my troubles? Ain't none of your business.
Again, somebody who's thinking straight.
We didn't like the look of the odds. We liked them even less once the fella showed up with the dynamite.
Yeah, that bunch would have been glad to blow me hell west and crosswise.
The unseen old man finally stepped into the doorway. He was twisted sideways and held the rifle in his right hand while resting the barrel across what appeared to be the stump of his left arm. That sleeve of his faded flannel shirt was pinned up where most of the limb was missing. The ease with which the old-timer handled the rifle told the kid the injury wasn't a new one. The missing arm might not have been caused by an injury. He could have been born that way. He was short, stocky, and mostly bald. A fringe of white hair circled the back of his head, running from ear to ear. A thick white beard jutted from his chin and hung down over his chest. He wore overalls, the flannel shirt, and work boots that laced up. He stared at McCall for a second.
Good Lord. You're a woman, ain't you, Red?
That's right. Does that bother you, mister?
Shoot, no. Sis, it's been a long time since I've seen a female, that's all. Stuck off under this rim like I am. Don't recollect seeing a gal toting firearms since I knowed that bawdy old wench Calamity Jane. Got to say, you're a whole heap prettier than Calam ever was. She had a way of comforting a man, though, when he needed it.
That's about enough of that. Who are you, mister?
See, I done told you. You don't know me from Adams off Ox. I'm Chester Blount. Name mean anything to you?
I can't say that it does.
Well, no reason it should. I've always lived a quiet life. Until Spud Guthrie decided he had to have Dos Caballos Canyon there.
I never heard of Spud Guthrie either. He doesn't sound like a very pleasant sort.
Oh, he ain't. And that's the blessed truth. Them was Guthrie's men trying to kill me. Are you claiming that you bowed them up, mister?
We did. Some of them, anyway.
How in blazes did you manage that? Sounded like the world was coming to an end for a second there. Way the ground shook, I was pretty near afraid the whole rim was about to come down on top of me.
They had a crate of dynamite they were going to use to blast you out. The whole crate sort of went off.
Well, I hope to smile it did. Kill all the varmints?
Yeah, it looks like a couple of them got away.
Two of you best take off with a tall and uncut then, whilst you still got a chance to do so. Them boys will run straight back to Guthrie, and when he hears what happened here, he'll saddle up the other 30 or 40 of his gun wolves and come calling. He ain't been too unfriendly so far, but this will really piss him off.
Sending 7 hard cases after you with a crate of dynamite isn't being too unfriendly?
You don't know Spud Guthrie. That sawed-off little runt is the meanest man to ever walk the face of the earth. If you don't believe me, you just stick around here and see what happens.
If that's true, then you can't stay here either, Mr. Blount. We have an extra horse. You can come with us.
I ain't going nowhere. I've been prospecting Dos Caballos for nigh on to 10 years now, and I ain't leaving just when I'm about ready to finally make a good strike.
Take it easy. McCall's right. If this man Guthrie shows up with an army of hired killers, you won't stand a chance. Why don't you come with us now, and you can always come back later once things have cooled off a little.
They ain't gonna cool off. And I can't leave, because if I do, when I come back, Dos Caballos won't be there.
Won't be there? Where's a canyon going to go?
Underground. Guthrie's gonna blast the sides and collapse the whole blame thing.
Why in the world would he do that?
Guthrie's Rafter G-Spread is up yonder on top of the rim. It's a good ranch, but his herds have grown so fast he's running short of grass and water. Now, it just happens he owns some land down here on the flats with plenty of grass and water, but there ain't no good way to get his stock to it. He'd have to drive the critters nigh on to 100 miles to get a good-sized herd down off the rim. Only other way would be to bring him single file down one of the narrow trails. That'd be a recipe for disaster. That's when he brung in some engineering fella who told him that if he blasted the sides of the canyon, made them collapse into the canyon itself, he could haul in some dirt and make a nice wide trail out of it. Then his herds could get up and down off the rim without no trouble.
But Guthrie's main problem is that you own Dos Caballos Canyon, right?
Dang right. Filed on it more than 10 years ago when I decided I was going to prospect. I got a nose for gold. I know it's there.
If you own the canyon, why don't you just sell it to Guthrie? If it's that important to him, he'd probably give you a good price.
No offense, man, but wasn't you just listening? I'm gonna make a good strike in there, and it'll make me a lot richer than Spud Guthrie ever could.
And how long did you say you'd been looking for that strike?
10 years.
Didn't you ever stop to think that if you haven't found it in that amount of time, you probably never will?
You say that because you ain't got no faith. I do.
There's a difference between having faith and being mule-headed. Come on, kid, let's get out of here.
Hang on. Did Guthrie offer to buy you out, Mr. Blount?
He did. I turned him down flat.
What did he do then?
Well, he tried to run me out, of course. Several times whilst I was working up in the canyon, somebody took pot shots at me. They come close enough, I could tell he was trying to scare me, not kill me. When I didn't leave, they started coming closer.
Until today, when he sent men to kill you.
Yep. I seen them varmints coming and hot-footed it for the cabin. Barely made it here before they started shooting at me. I guess Guthrie figured I might ford up, so he sent along that fellow with the dynamite, too.
That backfired on him.
Thanks to you two. I reckon if you hadn't come along when you did, I'd be trying to kick down the pearly gates right about now. Either that or shaking hands with the devil.
You're welcome. But from here on out, you're on your own, old-timer. If you were smart, you'd light a shuck and put this place far behind you.
It's too late for that. Some of Guthrie's men are dead. He ain't gonna stand for that. I told you he was a mean sidewinder. He'll have to kill me now. I would never be able to run far enough or fast enough to get away from him.
Then what are you going to do?
Stay here and fight. Do as much damage to the son of a buck and his hired guns as I can till they get me. It ain't been that good of a life, I reckon, but it's sure enough been a long one. I ain't got no kick coming. At least I'll go out scrapping.
There's something else you can do.
What's that? Because I ain't seeing it.
Sell a half interest in Dos Caballos Canyon to me.
Damn it! Have you forgotten that you're my prisoner, Morgan?
Not anymore. Unless you want to shoot me and cut my head off like you keep threatening to do. I'd have to try to stop you from doing that.
What the hell are you folks talking about? Buying the canyon? Taking folks prisoner and cutting off their heads? That's loco.
Morgan's a fugitive from the law. He's wanted for breaking out of prison and killing a couple guards over in New Mexico territory. There's a $10,000 reward for him.
The part about killing the guards is a lie. I never did that. And the only reason I broke out of prison was because I'd been locked up by mistake. They thought I was somebody else.
That's a pretty wild story.
It gets even wilder. Morgan claims he's really some sort of tycoon who just pretends to be a gunfighter.
I never used the word tycoon, but my real name is Conrad Browning, and I do have a lot of lucrative business interests.
Well, if that's true, then what in blazes are you doing running around the frontier looking like some sort of saddle tramp?
It's a long story.
You gave me your word, Morgan.
That I'd go to Santa Fe with you. I still will, but only after we help Mr. Blount settle his troubles.
It ain't that I don't appreciate the offer, but why would you want to help an old codger like me? An hour ago, you had never laid eyes on me.
That's true. I guess you could just say, I used to know somebody who would have wanted me to help you.
You heard what he said. Guthrie has dozens of gunmen working for him, and you've got an appointment with the law in Santa Fe.
One that I'll keep when the time comes. Think about it, McCall. This is a pretty isolated area. Pike's not going to be looking for us here. If we hole up here for a while, maybe he'll get tired and stop searching for us.
Who's Pike?
An added annoyance. You might have something there, kid. We lay low for a while, then make a run for Santa Fe. There's just one problem with the idea.
What's that?
Guthrie's gunhawks will probably kill us.
Well, you just have to make sure that they don't.
Claudius Turnbuckle was a tall, burly, balding man with mutton chop whiskers. Dressed in an expensive suit and bowler hat, he made an impressive figure as he strode determinedly across the plaza in front of the Territorial Courthouse in Santa Fe. For the past few years, the imposing brick building had served as the territorial capital. The previous capitol building had burned down, and a new one was being built. According to one of the clerks in the hotel where Turnbuckle was staying, the fire's origin was mysterious and likely arson, motivated by the fact that nearly everybody in town had thought the old capitol building with its Victorian design was ugly as sin and out of place in the predominantly Spanish architecture of Santa Fe. Turnbuckle didn't give a damn about any of that. He wanted to see Governor Miguel Otero face to face to plead Conrad Browning's case. It was absurd to think that a man such as Conrad should be a wanted fugitive, but so far, Turnbuckle hadn't had a chance to persuade the territorial governor of that fact. Turnbuckle went into the building and proceeded down marble-floored hallways to the governor's spacious office. Otero's aides had turned him away a couple of times since he'd been in Santa Fe, but Turnbuckle wasn't going to be stopped any longer, even if he had to pick up one of those slick-haired political flunkies and toss him out a window. In fact, he almost hoped that would happen. It would feel good to cut through some of the red tape by force. Of course, he couldn't give in to that impulse. And in the long run, it probably wouldn't help Conrad. Turnbuckle took off his hat as he entered the outer office. The clerk who sat at the desk there recognized him.
Governor Otero doesn't have any time available today to meet with you, Mr. Turnbuckle. As I've explained to you, and the governor's aide, Mr. Blanton, has explained to you, you'll need to make an appointment to speak to the governor. And the earliest you'll be able to do that is the middle of next month.
The middle of next month is too late! My client could be dead by then, murdered by bounty hunters who are after him on false charges.
I realize that's your claim, but you'll have to present proof to the governor.
Which I can't do without seeing him.
Which you can't do until next month, yes. I fail to see what the confusion is.
Turnbuckle glanced out the window and thought about how good it would feel to toss the smarmy little slug through it. Reaching into his coat, he took out an envelope.
I have a letter here from Lew Wallace asking Governor Otero to meet with me right away.
Governor Wallace?
That's right.
I'll give the letter to Mr. Blanton. If he chooses to pass it on to the governor, I'll let you know.
Not good enough. I want you to put the letter in the governor's hand personally.
I can't do that. Mr. Blanton...
I'm tired of hearing about Mr. Blanton.
Turnbuckle started toward a door at the side of the office. Blanton's office was on the other side of that door.
I'm going to talk to him myself, dammit!
Sir, you can't.
He was too late. Turnbuckle already had hold of the knob. He twisted it and shoved the door open. The chair behind the desk in Blanton's office was empty. Turnbuckle glanced to his left and saw the man standing next to a sideboard with a decanter of liquor in one hand and a glass in the other. Charles Blanton was a raw-boned man with a squarish head and graying fair hair.
What's the meaning of this, Turnbuckle?
A bit early in the day, isn't it?
What do you want?
I have here a letter from Lew Wallace requesting that Governor Otero see me immediately and grant me every possible consideration.
General Wallace is no longer in a position of authority in the New Mexico Territory.
I'm aware of that. But he's asking Governor Otero to cooperate out of personal courtesy, as one statesman to another.
You can't see the governor. He's much too busy. You'll just have to wait.
Every day this matter waits is another day my client is in needless danger.
Well, perhaps if your client hadn't escaped from prison, he wouldn't be in danger.
If Conrad Browning hadn't escaped from prison, he never would have exposed the crimes of some powerful men. Perhaps that's why you don't want me to see the governor. You don't want the stench of official corruption to rub off on him.
The governor is an honest man. His reputation is beyond reproach. And he didn't appoint that crooked warden. His predecessor did.
Then he should be anxious to undo the damage that was done, including the injustice to my client.
The circumstances don't matter. The man known as Kid Morgan broke out of prison. Two men died in that escape. Until these matters are properly dealt with in court, the charges against him will remain in place. And that's my final word on the subject, Counselor. And I don't care how many letters you have from Lew Wallace or anybody else.
So you're the governor now, is that it?
Yeah. No, of course not. But he's given me great latitude to deal with administrative matters as I see fit. If you want to petition for a pardon for your client after he's been tried and convicted, feel free to do so.
With a 10 grand bounty on his head, dead or alive, he'll never make it to trial, and you know it!
Well, that's regrettable, but nothing can be done about it.
You mean you won't do anything about it?
Get out, Turnbuckle, or I'll call the guards and have you removed!
This isn't over. I'll go to the newspapers. From what I've heard, the governor's support is rather shaky to begin with. A scandal like this can't help him.
Following the rule of law is not a scandal. Do your worst, Counselor.
Blanton stepped into a small windowless room lit only by a single candle. A young, handsome man with sleek blonde hair sat at a table. The table and a couple of chairs were the only pieces of furniture in the room. The young man had a bottle of tequila and two glasses in front of him.
Come in, Blanton. Why did you want to see me?
It's Turnbuckle. He's threatening to go to the papers.
I don't see how that's a problem.
You assured me that nothing illegal was going on.
It's not, technically. But some of the papers are very opposed to Governor Otero. If they play up this affair, it could erode his support. And he can't really afford that. What do you want me to do?
Take care of it. I've had a man following Turnbuckle for the past few days. He always has supper at the same cafe near his hotel. If he was waylaid by a thief while he was walking to the cafe...
That would solve the problem for both of us, eh?
That's right. Yeah, it would be a tragedy, of course, but it's not that uncommon for people to be killed by thieves.
Indeed, it's not. Don't worry about it. I have a feeling that everything will work out for us. Unfortunately for Claudius Turnbuckle, he won't be able to say the same thing. But that's what he gets for trying to help a son of a bitch like Conrad Browning.